You are listening to the Nurturing Birth Doula podcast, where we aim to dispel the myths, debunk the stories, and help people better understand the role of the doula in the 21st century. I am your host, Sophie Brigstock, owner of Nurturing Birth and course facilitator, and I invite you to grab a cuppa, pop on your headphones, and listen in as I chat to doulas, birth keepers, and nurturing birth friends about all things perinatal.
Welcome back, everybody. So lovely to have you here. I'm really excited today to have my gorgeous friend, Sarah Madigan, coming to talk to me. And before we dive into the episode, I just want to offer up a content warning. We are going to be talking about child loss today. We are going to be talking about pregnancy, birth, and parenting after loss. And so if that does not feel right for you, then I invite you to switch off and come back to another episode another time. But for those of you who stay, I hope that you will enjoy what I know is going to be a really deep and loving conversation. So, Sarah, without further ado, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me on, Sophie. And oh, here's Neil with my cup of tea.
Yeah, we knew that was going to happen. Hey.
Catch you again later. Have a good time, guys.
Thank you, Neil. No, I'm so grateful to be here, Sophie, and excited to talk about this. And I think, you know, I love that you gave a content warning for people who are not in the right place. And for those who have stayed, you know, my whole mission in life is spreading joy. And loss doesn't always have to be this heavy, sad thing that we avoid. And actually the turning towards it can bring so much joy, you know. So my intention for this conversation is that, we don't sugarcoat things. We get very real. But actually by doing that, we also, the deeper the sorrow, sometimes the deeper the joy, right? The Khalil Gibran poem, you know?
Yeah.
So, no, but I'm thrilled to be here, Sophie. Thank you for having me.
So for those who don't know you, can you give us a little bit of a background? Who is Sarah Madigan?
Of course, yeah. So I am a senior clinical psychologist, but I left the National Health Service years and years ago now. And I founded a business called The Joy Movement, which, as you know, Sophie, is a business in memory of Finley, our first child, who he died from spinal muscular atrophy in 2015. And so it's really inspired by him and inspired by the process of caring for a terminally ill child and all of the wisdom and learnings that I accumulated during that time. And it's also deeper than that, you know. It's just a way of working with people. You know, I retrained as a transformational coach, and now I train other people to be coaches, and I run courses helping people to grow businesses. But it's all with the absolute desire to help people to feel more joy in life and to experience all of the many moments of joy that are right under their noses that they might sometimes miss, right? And we all do that. And I teach this all the time. And yeah. I still miss bits all the time. But it's like, how can we lean into the preciousness and the joy of life? And I learned about the preciousness of life through losing a child, you know, really.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so I will say right now, I am one of your coaches who's trained with you, came and jumped aboard the Joy Movement and have just kind of been lapping up everything there ever since. Mm-hmm. And I think you and I connected initially around Finney, really, didn't we? Mm-hmm. That's how our first ever conversation really was about him and the memory.
Was it?
Yeah.
Tell me, I can't remember.
So we met on a retreat.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, we met on a retreat, and at the first evening, we sat next to each other. We didn't know each other. We sat next to each other at a table, and you told me the story of your first boy, your lovely Finney, and yeah. I was so touched by that story. It was really emotional. Everyone else around the table was chatting and all buzzy, buzzy, buzzy. And we were having this really kind of a powerful conversation. And I don't think you knew at the time that I was a doula or what I, that I ran Nurturing Birth or anything like that. But it was it felt like such a privilege to hear your story. And to hear what Finley's life has inspired since. Because there's been a lot.
And of course, I've absolutely loved having you involved in, you know, in Spectacular School and in the courses. It was such a pleasure to meet you. And I suppose from my perspective, I talk about Finley oftentimes, so it's really easy for me to forget that particular aspect of meeting you. I actually remember meeting you, as soon as we got there, you were one of the first people that came and sat by me, and I just, as you know, I just like fell in love with you instantly. And I remember the physical feeling in my body of just talking to you and feeling great in your presence, actually. That's what I remember.
it's that doula thing, isn't it? Like, as a doula, it's, for so many people, it's just about being with people. It's about holding space. And being, one of our mentors discusses, has the phrase, being comfortable with the discomfort. And for many people coming in and training as a doula, their greatest fear, we always ask them before they start what their greatest fear is, and it's usually around loss. How will I cope being around people and the potential of loss? So
interesting.
I'm really interested to dive in and to really explore what came up for you. Obviously, losing Finney was just the worst thing, I assume, that ever happened in your life. And then you made a brave decision to go on and have another child. So what was that like, going in with all of the experience of loss behind you or around you?
I'd love to circle back to the idea of the doulas as well, and just to give a perspective from the parent who's been bereaved and some kind of unsolicited advice.
Go on.
For the doulas, I'm happy to come back to that. But yeah, having another child is interesting, Sophie. What comes up for me, and just for the listeners, for your wonderful listeners, I've done zero preparation for this interview, and I love how Sophie runs this. But I actually think it's so interesting that this is really just what's coming to me intuitively. But what comes up for me, Sophie, when you ask me the question about what was it like having a child after loss? I had a lot of trust, and I don't know why, but I really had a lot of trust. You know, we lost Finley, and obviously that was just, it was so sad in lots of, well, in so many deep ways. And it was also so joyful, and it taught us so much. It's not black and white, you know. And then we had a form of IVF called PGD, pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, for those who might not know. And we had 4 embryos that we couldn't implant. And then there was nothing to implant. And then we had another round of IVF, and there was one embryo that didn't have SMA that they could implant. And then we miscarried. And, you know, we were lucky enough to go on and have a healthy baby. But even I remember during the miscarriage, I was so connected to trust, you know, and my husband was understandably really sad and almost despairing. But all I can say, Sophie, you know, maybe I was a child clinical psychologist at the time, and I had children that I'd worked with who I'd fallen in love with. I just always had a belief that it was all unfolding as it was supposed to. I didn't always have that belief with Finney. I was obviously very resistant of what happened to him to begin with, not so much now. But I just believed that it would be all right. And even if that meant adoption, I knew that the right spirit that was meant to be my child would find me. And I didn't know how that was going to happen, but I knew it would happen, and I knew I would fall in love with whoever it was that I was parenting. And I just had that trust. You know, it was interesting, you know, we did start trying for another baby. It wasn't so long after Finley died, and I remember somebody once commenting on it at work, and I felt quite offended because it's such a personal decision, and I didn't have an intimate relationship with this person. And it was just what felt right for us, and so there's no right or wrong, right? And it just felt right for us. We wanted to be parents again. It was really, and I'm sure there's other people listening who've experienced this, but it's a very difficult experience to, becoming a parent. It becomes a huge part of your identity in your life, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you walk down the street and people smile at you when you've got a baby. People interact with you differently. You almost feel proud. I'm a parent. Look at me pushing my buggy. And the world interacts with you differently. And then not to have that is really brutally hard.
Yeah.
Suddenly walking down the street without a pushchair and without the identity of being a parent, without the people responding to you in warm ways.
Yeah.
It's really, really distressing. Yeah. And it's not just the loss of your child, it's the loss of the identity as a parent, and we both wanted that again, we didn't try straight away. We were so lucky after Finney died. We went to New Zealand for a while and healed in nature, and took time, and in a way we didn't have obviously any other physical children at that time, and so we were able to do that. And in some ways, I think children are a welcome distraction if you're grieving. But also, it's hard to really just let yourself grieve. Whereas we had that luxury of just going and being together and grieving. And so, yeah, he died at the end of September in 2015. And we went to New Zealand not too long after that. And we were there for Christmas. We were trekking in Abel Tasman on Christmas Day. And, it was very healing and very distressing and very beautiful and all of the things. But we did take time to grieve, and then it didn't take too long until we started the process. I was aware that I was getting older, and I didn't want, the medical advice was don't hang around.
Yeah, don't wait.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. And I've said this to you before, Sophie, but I wasn't preparing for this interview, like I said, but I was kind of, obviously I was thinking about the themes that I imagined we'd be talking about today. And I've talked to you about this before, but I do feel bereft that I didn't have the support of a doula during both of those times. It makes me emotional thinking about it, just because, and for anyone listening who is a doula or who's thinking of becoming a doula, oh my God, I would have loved the support of somebody who just had me in mind, and really was attuned to me. Because I look back and I'm so proud of previous me that I wasn't really thinking of my needs. I was just doing what was being done. And, and especially the births were, both of my births were traumatic in different ways. But the culture that we have over here is that it does, as long as the baby's healthy or as long as the baby's all right, doesn't really matter about the mum. And I had been socially conditioned to believe it was like indulgent to, it's like this middle class indulgent thing to invest in a doula. And I couldn't feel more strongly about how that needs to change, and how mothers and women and parents need care and deserve that care. And some of your doulas might be fearful of, I don't know how I'll cope, like you said, if there's loss, but that could be the biggest gift. That might be your favorite experience as a doula. If you if you do support someone through that,
yes,
like that could be a beautiful, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you don't have to fear getting it wrong. Just being there and getting it wrong is perfect. You don't have to get it right. There's no way you can get it right. And, that might just be such a valuable, and if you're listening to this and you're like, wow, this actually does feel good in my body, that's like an area you could specialize in as a doula as
oh,
well.
Oh,
like,
yeah, absolutely.
Supporting women after loss, And I so wish I'd had that. I do,
Tell me, what do you feel, with retrospect, and hindsight's a glorious thing, isn't it? What do you feel that a doula could have brought to you and your husband, the lovely Neil, that might have made a difference?
I'll get emotional, but I'm just going to allow that because it's just so important. And it's so important what you guys do. You know, it's, well, I think what's actually coming to mind straight away is the actual birth of Isaac, my second child, which was in the same hospital that Finney had been born in, and had a very traumatic time with him, and he had to be resuscitated on birth, and he was rushed to intensive care, and then we had to be ambulanced to another city. It was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And so for me, even being back in that building with the same smells, the same sounds,
yes,
for the first time since that experience, you know, Finney, he didn't die in that hospital, but he had lots of state. We visited that hospital so much during his life when they were trying to work out what was wrong. And I had all these associations with that hospital. And then I'm supposed to go in and relax and give birth. Like,
yes.
Exactly right.
Yes.
And it's just, you know, having somebody who could have just held space. Mm. You know, I was such a people pleaser as well, Sophie. Honestly, I've come... You wouldn't recognize me from where I am now, as you know me now, but I wasn't assertive about communicating my needs.
Yeah.
So here's something, just having somebody who could reflect back to me, it's okay to ask for your needs to be met. You don't have to worry about offending the mid, you don't have to worry about pleasing these people that you're never going to flipping well see again.
Yes.
This is important. This is your life. This is your birth. This is your baby's birth. Your baby and you both deserve a beautiful birth, and you're allowed to put, you know, boundaries around it. So, you know, I had, she was, you know, when I gave birth, the midwife, you know, she did the best with the information available to her, and I have a lot of gratitude for her, and I sent her lots of love, and she wasn't emotionally attuned. And I wish I'd had a doula who could have provided me with that. And then, you know, it's a bit of a lottery who you get, I suppose, as a midwife, whether or not they're emotionally attuned. I think perhaps it's very sad what happened to us. And she probably looked at the notes and couldn't cope with it. So she went into really like practical mode. But I, what my internal guidance system wanted was someone to connect with me emotionally.
Yeah.
And to say, wow, you know, that's, it's so sad what happened. And you're giving birth now, and that, you know, and just to be able to talk about it and to be aware of it and to be trauma informed, you know.
Yes.
There wasn't that, you know, and so the doula could have had a role in providing that and communicating to other people to provide that as well, right?
Yeah.
You know,
so it's quite scary. The most recent statistic that I saw said something like close to 80% of women and birthing people meet their midwife for the first time when they're in labor. Now,
yeah,
when you're thinking about such a physiological process and what the body needs in order to let go and to birth, the fact that you don't know that person, that you're being expected to build rapport, and often in an unfamiliar space, and what you're saying, just it, I really feel it, that thing of walking into a hospital. For most people, walking into a hospital has all sorts of associations with it. Associations of illness, of death, of unfamiliarity, of bright lights, of doctors, of white coat syndrome, those kind of things. In your situation, I'm hearing there is this whole additional swathe of things going on. The association of, and this is what I've experienced many times with clients, the experience of a former birth, you know, whatever that looked like. And in your case, with the very sad loss of your baby as well. So how can we expect people who you've never met before to immediately be like, I know exactly what you need, because
exactly,
you know, you don't have that rapport. Whereas when you work with someone as a doula, particularly when you are employed early on in that pregnancy process, and you know, I mean, the earlier the better in my book. You get to really get to know people, and rapport is like the most important part of the entire job. You know, knowledge out the window doesn't really 100%. Matter.
Well, yeah,
it's
exactly.
About connection and to understand what you've gone through, the things that you the things that you might have needed, the fears that you had, the dreams, the hopes, the expectations, the, you know, all of that makes for such a different experience.
Exactly. You know, and then there was actually like a very obvious physical thing that happened as well, where I wasn't given the opportunity to birth my placenta naturally, and no one encouraged me to even stand up or anything. Mm. And then the midwives pulled the umbilical cord and snapped it.
Oh, wow.
So I had birthed him naturally and would have been fine to go home, but all of a sudden I had to have a spinal and stay in hospital for a few days.
Yeah.
And bearing in mind all of those associations that I had with the place, and then that, you know, anyway, it was a very interesting thing, Sophie. At the time, like I say, one, I was a bit of a people pleaser and I was like, oh no, don't worry, don't worry. But I had no idea that that was malpractice. And I had no idea that I just didn't understand about birth. I didn't even know that they should have, I wasn't empowered with the knowledge that they should have given me the opportunity to stand up and walk around and just not to rush the process and to birth the placenta naturally.
Yeah.
But a doula would have known that. And a doula would have told them to stop if they were pulling too hard on my cord, so hard that they could snap it. It was just, you know, somebody with that knowledge to empower me. I was so not empowered because I didn't know, and, you know, my husband didn't know, you know.
And then it was that thing of, why would you know? Why would somebody going into that know necessarily? Yeah. And certainly, why would a partner know those things?
Exactly.
It's really interesting. One of the things that comes up most commonly around doulas is, why would I need a doula? I've got my partner. I mean, one of my favorite things about doulaing is working with the partners, is empowering the partner to be the best possible person they can be. So, you know, I've been at so many different births where maybe the partner was not comfortable with any form of emotional intimacy and comfort, and therefore I got to step in there. In other cases, they were absolutely there, but, you know, they needed some practical support. So it's about filling the gaps. It's about empowering people so that they can be the best version of themselves. And also, not for the birthing person, not to have to be in their neocortex and be going, do you know what? I don't think you should be pulling on my cord right now because I'm giving birth.
Yeah, well, exactly. And, you know, I was at that point, I was like, I was so... you know, this idea that the baby's healthy, and you can imagine after that first birth, he came and he was crying and he was healthy, and all the oxytocin, I was just beside myself with happiness and joy. And he was on my chest, and you know, with Finney, I didn't get that skin to skin, which was such a source of grief for me, because he just got whipped off into intensive care, and I didn't hold him for the first week of his life, you know. And whereas I had this baby, this new baby, and it was so beautiful, so nice thinking of it. And he was on my chest, and he was there, and I was just ecstatic, actually. And, you know, I was sort of like, I don't care about anything else. And so I wasn't aware of, actually, you know, because it was, and honestly, Sophie, it was really traumatic in, you know, only in retrospect, but over time after the birth, you know, multiple people had their arms inserted in me to try and get the placenta away. I mean, it's right up here, right? I've got my hand just below my boobs.
Just, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's so invasive and intrusive, and it hurt the organs in my body. Things hurt that didn't hurt for a long time after that, Sophie. And, you know, and it only pieced together a while after, when one of my very close friends is a doula, and she was horrified when she heard this story. And then I started putting two and two together, and I was like, oh, that really shouldn't have happened, and that really wasn't okay, and actually my needs were important. And at the time, I was just happy as Larry to go along with it. Oh, don't worry, guys. You know, and I do wish I'd had someone there to say, no, don't do that, and somebody... Yeah, just to provide that emotional support. And like you say, actually, to expect the midwives who've only just met you to know what you need. Like, because the person they had before might have had a complaint about her being too emotional. Right?
I mean, midwives are, I mean, magical, magical human beings. How they do the role that they do, I honestly, I don't know. And I've said that many times on this podcast. And I think it is a totally unrealistic expectation that they be able to go from one birth straight into another, to another, to another, without any kind of debriefing, without any trauma support, without having rest, without having breaks. I mean, you know, the majority of them don't drink or eat during a shift because they know that they don't have the time to be able to go and have a break, go to the loo or anything. So it is.
Yeah, they're doing an amazing job. Yeah,
it is. They do. And we know that lots of things happen that it would not be happening in an ideal world. So yeah, I really hear that. And what I would love to think about now is what happened after the birth, and you came home and you had a baby, and you know, what was that process, the process of parenting again? You talked about, you know, that gorgeous feeling of walking down the street with a baby in a sling or a buggy, and you know, the world, you know, respects you in a different way or regards you in a different way. And then you didn't have that for a period of time.
Yeah.
And then you're back in that place again. How was the parenting experience second time round?
Yeah, let me think. Let me cast my mind back to that time. I mean, I remember coming home, and you know, we were just all so happy. And you know, our grandpa, you know, I think of my in-laws actually, you know, Finley was their only grandchild, so it was so amazing seeing them becoming physical grandparents again, you know, because they'll always be grandparents to Finley. But it was beautiful. It was beautiful. And I do remember the physical pain, you know, after having given birth. And I think that's something that I would have liked more support with. I mean, I was in incredibly, incredible pain. And yeah, you know, some more support around that would have been amazing. So I'm just going to honor that. And at the same time, you know, I did always have some concerns about how we're going to talk. I mean, I'm a child psychologist, senior child psychologist in training, but it was like, I did have concerns though, even though I would help other parents with difficult conversations. I thought, how am I going to talk to Isaac about the fact his brother died without scaring him, or, you know, how's it going to happen? But the whole, you know, having Isaac after Finney, I always, you know, when people talk about a rainbow baby, it's beautiful if that resonates for you. But for me, I almost felt protective of Isaac. Like he's not a baby after loss. He's just his own person.
Yeah.
He's just a separate person and a separate spirit who's arrived at this time. And I didn't want his identity to be too, you know, caught up in the fact that his brother died.
Yeah.
And so I always viewed him like a very separate spirit, you know, like just this separate spirit that's come to us. And yeah, it was glorious becoming a parent again. And, you know, there were, of course, you know, there were times when we were more anxious than your next parent, I would imagine. And, you know, there were having, you know, when we had Isaac, 50% of our experiences of being a parent were that the child died.
Yeah.
You know, we had two children and one of them had died. So 50% of our experience is that a child dies.
Yeah.
And so it takes time. Yeah. Think he's not going to die, you know, and we knew that he didn't have spinal muscular atrophy, but Neil found that hard to really believe, you know, and Neil was anxious that he would develop it, and even though the blood test suggested otherwise, he would be anxious about that. I would be more anxious about, you know there was trauma, you know, there's just trauma getting replayed. Like it was incredibly, obviously traumatic having Finley, knowing he was going to die and that he could die at any time. So then it's not just that he died, it's that we had that physical experience for months and months of he might die. So with Isaac, of course, we still at times had these things of like, he might die. And then we knew rationally that that wasn't likely. Mm. And that was there. So as beautiful and as glorious as it was anxiety provoking at times. And that, you know, I remember once being in Morrison's cafe actually, and he was a toddler, and I can't remember what it was that I was anxious about. I think maybe, I can't remember specifically what it was, but I remember, and I'm not really somebody who lets himself cry too much. I've got a bit of a be strong schema, But I remember just having a little weep in Morrison's cafe because I was just like tired of worrying about him. And I was like, I just wish I didn't worry he was going to die. So that was part of our experience, which it's important to acknowledge. And the majority of the time, it didn't feel like that. You know, that they were like fleeting moments of anxiety. The majority of our experience of parenting him as a baby and a toddler and now as a child, and especially now, are that it just feels very joyful. And the longer, obviously, his life is, the more experience we've had of him being fine. It gets easier and easier, you know?
And he is the embodiment of joy, Isaac, isn't he? I mean, he's just... He is larger than life.
He is. You know, he'll be six this Sunday, actually, this coming Sunday. And you know, and we talk about Finley very, very openly. There's photographs of him everywhere. We talk about death very openly. And I'm very connected to how that's perfect for him and how that enriches him. You know, he talks often about how if he sees an animal, he'll say, death is just part of life. And, you know, and this week he did say to me, actually, this week just gone, he did say to me, oh, you know, I didn't get to meet my brother. He just out of nowhere, he just said that. And I said, yeah, I know. It's hard, that, isn't it? And he said, yeah, it feels really sad. And then he said, will you have another baby so I can meet them? And I was like, no, Isaac. I think we're a bit too old and tired now. But but no, you know, he asks, and he, you know, he literally has asked things like, where was Finney when he died? What did you say to him when he was dying? And we talk about it. We talk about it openly. I'm not scared to cry in front of him. I mean, I don't cry in an uncontained way often in front of him. But the odd time I let him see me sad about Finney, because that is normal and it's real, you know, it's just life.
I mean, you know, that just makes my heart sing. I mean, if that doesn't sound weird, because actually that is normalizing human emotions, which, I mean, you and I talk about that a lot, don't we? But that thing of like children knowing that it's okay to feel sad or angry, or, you know, all of the full range of emotions. Exactly. And I want to circle back. You talked earlier, we were discussing around the fear of around loss, particularly for doulas stepping into this role, and for parents too. I mean, you know, there is so much fear of loss and fear of grief. Yeah. And you were talking about kind of meeting it and getting up close and personal with it. What do you feel you've learned about grief itself? If that's not too big a question.
No, I actually genuinely love talking about grief and death, because I, as you know, it's inspired so much beauty in my life, and people don't talk about it enough. That's my feeling, is that it's such a missed opportunity for depth and understanding and love when we don't talk about grief, and when we're so avoidant of thinking about our own death or of other people's death. You know, what grief has taught me, well, first of all, like I said before about, you know, the doulas potentially fearing loss or fearing grief, I would just, to that I would say, you know, you cannot get it wrong, and literally just being there with someone, you don't have to do anything, just being with someone is such a gift when they're experiencing loss or when they have experienced loss. Because we, especially in the UK, live in a culture where people are so avoidant.
I was going to say.
People cross
the road.
They do. You know, and if you can just be with someone and just tolerate your feelings, it's such a gift. Mm. And you'll actually probably be really inspired, because when we relate, so here's what I've learned about grief. When we relate more intimately with death and grief, we relate more intimately with our life, because we learn and we know and we feel and we remember that life is completely sacred and it's completely precious. You know, we obviously held our little boy as he died, and it was obviously so sad, and it has been the biggest gift. And, you know, I talk about that openly, and, you know, I've had some odd criticisms on Instagram, and I don't care because people don't understand it. And I know that Finley absolutely would want me to be happy and to be joyful and to make meaning of his life. I know that he wouldn't want me to try and prove my love to him by being miserable for the rest of my life. You know, when he was actually dying, we promised, whilst he was dying, we said to him, you know, it's okay to let go, and we promise we will make life more beautiful in your honor. You don't need to worry about us. This was just intuitively what came up for me. Like, I had a feeling his spirit, you know, needed to hear that, needed to know that we were going to be all right, you know? And it's so sad. And here's an interesting thing. Actually, Sophie, I know that you're a brilliant breathwork practitioner. It was actually a breathwork session years ago, with someone called Kate Gaskell, I think. She was, do you know
She's
her?
a friend of mine, yeah.
Is she a friend of yours?
Yeah.
Well, she was spectacular. And I remember in the session, Sophie, having it, she did, it was with Susie Ashworth, and she did a breathwork session, and then there was a gong bath. And in the session, I remember having a completely significant breakthrough about grief. And this might be helpful to the doulas, you know, who are thinking about working with clients going through this. But I had this like knowledge, and it's so interesting because this has been really present with me the last few weeks. But I had this like sense that I am vast and expansive. I'm the universe. My grief is a tiny part of my physical experience. It's a tiny part and my emotional experience, but it's a, there's nothing to fear. It's just a tiny part of who I am. And it can consume people so much that they forget that and they identify with it a lot. But I had this realization that I don't need to fear my grief because I am the universe, and it's just a tiny part of who I am. And if it's part of me, then there's nothing to fear. And that's quite hard to really put into words, that physical feeling. But it really was a sense of, I'm not going to look, my grief will not consume me. Because I think there's that fear sometimes for parents, you know, that if I connect to my grief, and I had it for a while, maybe my grief hasn't hit me yet. Maybe one day it's going to floor me and I won't function anymore. Or maybe I'll start crying and I'll never stop. And that's a fear that lots of my clients have. And it's physically impossible, by the way. If you're a parent and you're scared and you've been through loss like I have, and you're scared of that, or if you're a doula working with a parent that's scared of that, just know that it's physically impossible to cry forever. You just won't. It does come to an end, and it's safe and it's okay to connect to sadness and grief and to express it, you know? But yeah, I mean, the biggest, I'll finish up now, but the biggest thing is that it just taught me that how precious life is, you know? It just, grief and Finley's death taught me that life is just so precious. And, you know, the gift of Finney dying is that we're so grateful for Isaac and for all of our relationships and for our lives, because we saw that he had that taken away from him, and I've got this gift of a life, and I've still got a healthy body, and that's such a gift, you know? And that's, as doulas, you can be inspired by your clients, and you know, you can be, you don't have to pussyfoot around people who are grieving. You know, you can be a brave, positive voice for these people, and you know, you can hold space for them and encourage them, you know?
I think the other thing that's really important to remember is that you are not the only source of support. So, you know, I think often doulas feel like they've got to carry all of the responsibility. And actually, you know, you've just beautifully given an example of how actually you were supported by different people in different ways. So having that breathwork session, for example, was a really powerful support. And, you know, friends, family members, community, medical staff, professional therapists and counsellors, there are so many people around to provide support.
There are. And let's also not disempower the parent, you know, like when, I'm not saying you're doing that, but I'm saying to your doulas, don't view a bereaved parent as somebody that can't cope or that, you know, that you need to be responsible for. You're not their parent. They're an adult and they are powerful, and people can cope with grief. You know, there's so many examples of people who can and have triumphed in the face of grief and adversity, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And what you have created in Finney's memory is just incredible. Beautiful, it is.
It's amazing. And you know, I believe that he tasked me with a mission, and it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks, this is just a story I tell, it's how I make sense of it, that he tasked me with a mission to spread as much beauty and love and joy as possible in my lifetime, you know. And since Finney died, I don't care about things that are not important. I'm so much less concerned about people's judgments. I'm not scared to take big risks because I've learned how powerful I am, and nothing that bad can happen anymore. Mm. And so it's like, he's given me this, he's emboldened me and gifted me with this deep desire. And also I want to do him proud. I want him to be looking down on me, so proud of the beauty that I've spread with him. We do it as a team. That's how in my mind, I'm like, it's me and Finney working together as a team, you know? And so I'm so connected to that mission. Spreading joy in his memory, and it's beautiful, it's amazing.
Oh, I feel like we could carry on talking all day.
But thank you so much for having me. And yeah, if you're considering becoming a doula, or if you are a doula, thank you. And honestly, as a psychologist and a transformational coach and a bereaved parent, I just believe in you guys so much. I believe in this profession so much. I think every single mum deserves a doula. I think it should be flipping mandatory.
I totally agree, obviously.
It's my
vision that every single person who wants or needs doula support be able to access that. So that's part of the reason for doing this podcast, is to reach a wider audience and to enable people to see that they have that within them, that the things that they've been telling themselves, like, oh, I couldn't be a doula because, that actually those are just like temporary roadblocks in the way, and that when they remove those, they step in. And you know, can you imagine? I can't think of anything better than being able to be present and support somebody like you in that situation. I mean, just what a gift. What an
it would be a gift. And it would have been fun as well. Like, here's the thing. So here's the thing. Just because someone's a bereaved parent, that is only a small part of them. Or, you know, and it's like, actually, Neil and I are just so much fun. And if you had been our doula, we would have just had a right laugh.
Yeah. I'm going to say, absolutely. But also, I want to very, very quickly, before we close, share that you were saying about doulas supporting bereaved parents. Probably the most vivid memories that I have as a doula was supporting a couple who had experienced loss. And it was the most emotional doula job of my life. I hate calling it a job, but the, you know, experience. And I've never laughed more. We laughed, we cried. It was the most beautiful, powerful, brilliant experience of my entire doula career. So absolutely incredible. Sarah, before we close, tell people how they can find out more about you, because I know people will be going, where can I find out more about this incredible
thank you. Yeah, well, you can find me on Instagram. It's just Dr. Sarah Madigan, Dr. Sarah Madigan. There is a face, you can find me on Facebook as well at the Joy Movement. You can email me at sarah@thejoymovement.co.uk. And yeah, that's us.
Amazing. I am so grateful for you coming to chat to me today. And I invite anybody who has listened to this episode to reach out, share your thoughts, your takeaways, and ask any further questions. So thank you so, so much. Lots of love.
Thank you, Sophie. Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to the Nurturing Birth Doula podcast. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you've got any questions or any feedback, don't hesitate to come back to us. It's info@nurturingbirth.co.uk. And do follow us on social media @nurturing_birth on Instagram and Twitter. And you can find us on Facebook as well. Please do give us a review if you've enjoyed this episode. We are on Spotify, we're on Apple, and we would love to hear your thoughts about any future episodes you'd like to hear. So do get in touch. Thanks for listening. Bye.